Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Steve, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear
me? Okay. Yes, I can hear you.
All right, very good. Then we're all set.
You sure you don't want to hear me singing Yentl more often?
No, I'm good.
You sure?
Definitely good.
You don't want to hear about a young woman who wants to go to a Torah school? I think, I don't remember what it's actually called, but.
Nah, man, I'm good. I'm super good.
Are you sure? It's got Barbara Streisand. You love Babs.
No, Bette Midra.
Now who's being racist?
I was quoting an episode of Seinfeld. Thank you very much.
that doesn't help your case, Michael Richards.
it does. I mean, the case has absolutely helped.
What?
The case has absolutely helped.
Yeah. Oh, man. Michael Richards was just lucky. He made a shit ton of money before he imploded on himself.
Yeah, I mean that's usually the case. That's the thing. All the people who come out as massive scumbags always make enough money first, and then they come out as massive scumbags.
That's exactly. But here's a question for you: is that do you think that if like Michael Richards had that explosion, let's say like 3-4 years ago, like now he'd be a massive Trump supporter? Because that would be the only way he could get work is by the people who don't care that he's a massive tool.
Well, see, that's I don't think so. And I specifically don't think so because if you look at like the James Woodses, like none of them are getting work and they're openly shitbags and they're not getting work anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Well, they get work, but like their work that they get is all like not good.
I mean, yes, of course.
Yeah. I mean,
although I don't think they've been getting work. Like, I don't think James Woods has done anything since 2016. I'm pretty sure.
I think he's actually. I know he's done voices on Family Guy.
Yeah, I mean, voice acting. That's a thing. I meant like, you know, like as like, you know,
as James Woods
and getting a billing, right? Yeah, voice acting is kind of like a weird like nebulous zone where you. You get guys who are like working who like are generally scumbags. Like the voice of Winnie the Pooh is a huge piece of shit, and he gets plenty of voice acting.
Why is so, he a piece of shit?
Just look him up, dude. He's a fucking scumbag.
I'm gonna look this up right now because you know
he's a massive fucking Republican shitbag.
Well, I mean, I look for specific actions or maybe just something specifically he said.
Like some of his tweets are good enough, I would say.
Yeah, I'll give you that. It's as long as Jim Cummings is that who you're talking about?
Yes. This is correct.
Yeah, he's a. Let me see. Oh. that has nothing to do with his political leanings. this is him just being kind of a scumbag.
Yeah, totally.
However, it's not necessarily proven true. If it is, he is a massive, massive scumbag. But well, that's enough on that one. James Woods has actually acted live only once in 2017, since 2016, let's put it that way.
All right.
As himself in an episode of Dice, the TV series.
There you go.
Which is Andrew Dice Clay's TV series, which just does not. Like
not that is not surprising.
Yeah, that does not help quite a bit on that end. Though Andrew Dice Clay does have a soft spot in my heart for The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, which I think is a very underrated movie.
I don't even know what that is.
You don't know The Adventures of Ford Fairlane?
Never heard of it.
It's like the best way I can describe it is it's kind of like Hudson Hawk.
Okay.
But let me. He was in A Star Is Born. I haven't seen that movie yet. The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, 1990. So I think it came out a couple years before Hudson Hawk. I think Hudson Hawk was like mid-90s, if I'm correct. I don't know. But it's got a very similar tone.
All right.
Yeah, and I watched it a lot as a kid growing up because I knew, Hudson Hawk came in 91, so it's a year earlier. So it's not quite the... it never got as much play as I think Hudson Hawk did later on. Hudson Hawk had a lot of word of mouth that made it somewhat of a cult film later on. Mm-hmm. But Ford Fairlane never got that. Ford Fairlane was kind of a cult hit from the beginning, but not many people know it. So it's directed by Rennie Harlan, and, you know, he does a lot of fun movies.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, it's one I've never heard of.
Yeah. Rennie Harlan, he did Die Hard 2. He did Cliffhanger, Cutthroat Island, which is always my favorite.
I love Cliffhanger. Cutthroat Island is terrible. That movie's awful.
Oh yeah, that movie had no idea what it was doing.
Yeah, that was that was a movie where I was even when I was very young, I was like, this movie is fucking garbo.
It's also he also directed The Long Kiss Goodnight, if you remember that one, which was the big Shane Black. Like, it was like the one that he sold. I sold this script for $1 million, and the movie barely did anything. It's not terrible, but it's Shane Black. So you A, have to be in the mood for Shane Black style dialogue, which is way too clever for most people. I mean, and I don't mean that people won't get it. It's just, you're just like, people don't talk like this.
It's trying too hard.
It's very try hard. And it's also, it's misogynistic, but it's 96, so that's not bad. But if you watch any of his newer stuff, he tones it down a tiny bit, but it's still not good. It's you're kind of like, ah, Shane Black, knock this off. he did Iron Man 3 recently, and what's the one that the good guy? Yeah, the good guys. That's a good one. That was actually a really good movie. And then he did, the Predator movie, the newest Predator movie.
Oh, that movie was okay. It wasn't great, but I mean, it was okay. It wasn't as good as Predators, which is, I think, one of the finest Predator movies, because that movie can be summed up simply as, hey, man, did you see the first Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Yeah. Did you like it? So did we.
The Topher Grace thing was a little weird for me. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it just didn't pay off as nice as it could have.
Yeah, it was okay. Like, I mean, it was not a fucking bastion of incredible cinematography or filmmaking.
I mean, it was actually a pretty well shot movie. It was Robert Rodriguez.
It was fine. Yeah, I mean, it was fine.
Yeah, it was very fine. Speaking of movies, did you watch the Joe Bob marathon?
I got through most of it. I fell asleep halfway through Hack a Lantern.
Yeah. See, my problem is that I subscribe to Shudder through Amazon through my Prime account, so that's not on there yet.
Oh no.
Yeah, it'll be on there, you know, soon. I just gotta wait a little bit longer than most.
Yes.
So what movies were on there?
The first one was Haunt. Haunt. And the other one was Hack-O-Lantern.
Hack-O-Lantern.
Yes, Hack-O-Lantern.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I don't think I've seen either of those movies.
Hack-O-Lantern is an old cheesy late 80s movie. It was very cheesy, like extraordinarily cheesy.
Would you call it hack?
I don't know if I would call it hack so much as like I don't know. I'd say from what I saw so far, it seems to at least be worth a watch for the comedic bit.
The comedic bits?
Yeah, like well no, just like the fact that the film exists is kind of comedic, like the way it I don't know. It's just like it's hard to explain. Like it's not like Troll. It's not like Troll in that kind of way. It's like what's a good movie that like I guess I don't really know. It's just cheesy. Like it's like yeah, watch it. It's cheesy. It's not scary.
It looks like it was direct to video.
That's highly possible. I guess the story was it was made by so the long and short is it was made by an Indian director.
Yeah, it was.
Who wanted to make a movie about Halloween, who knew nothing about Halloween except that the film, John Carpenter's Halloween, made like $20 million or whatever.
Ah.
So that is what he knew. He knew that John Carpenter's Halloween made a shit ton of money. So that's the idea behind the movie. So like it's very, very weird, like what is considered like the like a Halloween tradition in that movie. It's pretty funny.
That sounds interesting. I probably wouldn't mind giving that a watch.
I would give it a go. I think it's certainly worth watching from what I saw so far. But I did fall asleep, but like I fell asleep after a sequence that was just like out of its fucking mind. I was like, this is great, but I'm really tired. Haunt, on the other hand, the easiest way I can explain or sum up Haunt is multiplayer Saw. that's what Haunt is. It's literally multiplayer.
Holy shit! Takes place in Carbondale, Illinois.
Carbondales.
For those who are unaware, Carbondale, Illinois is, you know, it's part of that, you know, people in Europe probably don't understand how our how big our states are.
How
big our stupid country is.
It's as big as it is dumb. So think about it like that. You got it. If you think about how dumb it is, that's how big it is.
It's how big it is. It's the home to like one of the bigger colleges in the state of Illinois, Southern, but it's also like, I don't know, what would you say? It's probably about a good 4-hour drive, right? From here?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. Well, actually, now that I think about it, it's probably even further than that. I'm going to bring this up on the old Google Maps, and I know this is super interesting, but you have to understand that between where Steve and I currently reside, and it's funny because I live probably 25 minutes from Steve, but it's still we're still going to do this via Zoom. But let's see, Carbondales. It's 5 hours. I was right. Exactly. Okay.
All right, there you go.
So it from our house to Carbondale is 5-hour drive. And this isn't like 5 hours of driving through a city. This is 5 hours of driving at like 90 miles an hour, which I don't know what that is in cups of tea per, you know, monarch, but it's a haul. We're going 90 miles an hour down desolate expressways.
Yes.
And I think the only major city you go through is Champaign, which is another college town, but even
Champaign.
It's only Champaign if it's from the Champaign region of Illinois.
Do you want any of the Champaign?
And it's a haul, but yeah, this movie takes place in Carbondale. I don't know why I got so excited about it taking place in Carbondale.
Local reference kind of thing.
I guess there's another horror movie on Shudder right now called The Haunting of Downers Grove.
That's funny.
And it actually takes place in Downers Grove, Illinois. I don't think it was filmed there, but
that's funny.
Yeah.
The Mortuary Collection was excellent.
I told you you'd like that one. I thought it was really good. I thought it was a pretty fun. It's a fun Halloween movie,
I'm a big fan of what is that?
Anthologies.
Yeah, anthology films in general. So like, I was like, ooh, a good one. Usually anthology films are like, there's a few okay, there's a few that are not good, but this one was just damn good.
With anthology movies, I think we did the math that in order for it to be a good anthology movie, 1/3 of the movie has to be good, because usually anthologies are about 3 mini movies in one movie.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's more, but about 1/3 of the movie has to be good.
Yes.
Just one of them has to be somewhat memorable and fun in order to watch the movie.
Yes, and I'd say this one was above average. I think all of them were pretty good.
Yeah, 2/3 of it means it's a pretty great one. And then if you anything more than that is a unicorn.
The my favorite part about that film is the wraparound story. There's a character in the wraparound story who also provides color commentary, and I thought that their color commentary was excellent. I was just like, oh yeah, it's legit. I was watching the story and I'm like, this is kind of, like I'm watching a story and like at the end of it I was like, well, that's kind of bullshit. Like that character was punished for no good reason. Like anyone would have done that. And then like literally the color commentary character tells the narrator like, well, that's bullshit. Anyone would have done that. And I was like, hey.
See, so, I don't like that. I really
like that.
I think meta commentary like that is I think it's too popular nowadays.
I somewhat agree, but I don't consider that 100% meta commentary, because the framework of that film is someone telling stories to another person.
Yeah. I mean, like, and because I just also watched Scare Me, which I don't know if you've watched yet.
I have not seen that, no.
Yeah.
But I was trying to get through Bly House, and that was...
wow. More like Drowned and Scary and Scabby.
Yeah, it was not good.
I was,
I don't think I'm going to finish it.
I God, if that was like five episodes and they just cut out so much of the bullshit, I'd be so much happier with that movie and with that show.
Yeah, it
just, as I said, I didn't like Hill House that much either.
I liked Hill House more than this film.
But well, yeah, film, yeah,
this miniseries. So like that's really all I got. Like it I don't, you know, I thought Hill House had some. I thought, I mean, we've discussed Hill House as it's too long.
Ad nauseum. Ad nauseum. Yeah.
Yes, there's too many episodes. That is a legit problem with Hill House. I think if you cut out some of the filler content for Hill House, you could have had an excellent, very punchy, you know, horror classic instead of what I would say, you know, a flawed experience is what it is. Because there were so many sequences in it that are like excellent. Like the sequence where the one kid is trapped in the creepy room. And they're like, the thing is coming, like the thing you can kind of catch glimpses of is coming out from the dumbwaiter.
Yeah.
Like the dumbwaiter sequence is excellent. That was fantastic. That was one of the better sequences of anything in any horror film I've seen.
Very good. Yeah. I just say that this haunting movie, these haunting miniseries, The Haunting of Bly Manor and The Haunting of Hill House, it's all really just commentary on the horrors of home ownership is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's fair.
Owning property is a terrifying experience.
What is that? You said the black mold.
The black mold. No, it's like the true horror of the true scary part of The Haunting of Hill House is the home depreciation.
Yes, the value of your home is depreciating.
Yeah. Watching the opening up black mold and going, ah, shit. Well, that's $200,000 down the tube. But anyway, yeah. So I've been watching a ton of horror movies. I've been telling people this is I really like the movie Spiral that's on Shudder right now. It's a Shudder original. Mm-hmm. It's not great. There are plot holes that you could drive a Mack truck through. But okay. It's a movie that stuck with me, and it's I think it's very, very interesting and a very serious take on horror that I haven't seen in a while that I enjoy.
Okay.
But it's not like serious horror, like, because my feeling is I think horror is swinging way far to the funny / meta commentary horror, which is fine. But I enjoy the serious stuff as well, because, you know, I love Lighthouse, I love Midsommar, I loved all those.
Yes, those are excellent.
Yeah, some like those artsy horror movies, I like those a lot.
Yeah, so I have a mixed. I find the artsy horror for me is a mixed bag. Like some of them are great, some of them are not. Like I didn't like The Witch was like I was like eh, it was kind of snoozy. But there is a knockoff The Witch movie, which is one of the worst films I've ever seen. I can't remember what it is. What the fuck is it called?
It's actually just called The Witch. They just combined the V's.
No, yeah, no. It was fuck. It was on Shudder. It's got a weird name. It's like Hagasbragger or some shit.
Hagasbragger.
No, literally, like that's its name.
Yeah, I know.
It's a weird fucking name. It's some foreign word.
What? Hagasbragger. Yeah, I tried watching the Dark on Netflix. Have you watched that one?
No.
It's like a Swedish horror miniseries that people keep on talking about. I tried watching it, but I was like, whoa, this is a bit much. This is, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was slow to begin with. And there's a lot of like unnecessary swearing in the English translation.
Okay.
To the point where I was kind of like, this is a bit unnecessary in my dialogue. It's like, the guy was like, what the fucking shit is going on? And I'm just like, yeah, you could say that if you're being attacked or something like that, but this was like he walked downstairs and he was like, what up, whores? It is, what the fucking shit is for breakfast? I mean, like, I'm exaggerating, of course, but it was very similar to that, and I was very taken aback.
I like it. That sounds like some classic non-stilted, very natural sounding dialogue.
I don't know why it made him sound like Borat. I think they had normal English speakers doing it, but oh, very nice. Good.
All right, so
that's how you know that 2020 is the worst, is because we're bringing back Borat impressions.
Hagazusa. That's the name of the Hagazusa is an old High German term for witch. So it's literally also called witch.
Ah.
And It's terrible. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's super like, it's super slow. Nothing happens. And then the movie just ends.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was so bad. That style of artsy horror, I can't stand it. Like, give me any trauma movie over anything like that. Like, just
because even Trauma War, the worst trauma movie I've ever watched in my life,
it's still watchable. Like, like, I mean, arguably watchable. Like, I will give you, like, you have to be like, I mean, it's watchable, arguably. Like, that's fair.
Arguably.
Yes, arguably. But the whole thing is like, I would watch Troma's War over and over and over again compared to Hagazusa. I would never want to watch Hagazusa ever again.
I watched two other ones that I want to talk about real quick. So I watched Scare Me, which you haven't watched yet. I don't know if you'll like it. Okay. I think it's a very high concept movie with a low, like, it's very high concept. It's when you watch it, you're like, okay, this is it. This is all that it is. But it's still kind of enjoyable. My biggest problem is that the main characters, one is Aya Cash, who, if you watch The Boys, she's in this season, but I've seen her around.
I do not watch The Boys.
Yeah. She's been kind of popular, but she's a professional actress, right? So she's acting like she's in a movie. The other main character is the writer-director, and he's also the main actor, and he just does not have her level of acting skill. So you see two people who are very mismatched in skill level having to share a room for, you know, an hour and a half movie.
I see.
And you're kind of like, there's more stuff that happens, but it's mostly these two characters talking to each other, and they're very mismatched. Like, they do not, I don't think they have the chemistry, and I don't think they connect well with each other. However, as I said, I don't think you'll like the movie, but I think you should watch at least some of it to get an idea of what it's about, because it's an interesting high concept.
Okay.
And then I also watched the Witches remake that they put out on HBO.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
Terrible? It does not have the charm. It's not terrible. It's a fine, well-directed movie. It just doesn't have the charm of the original.
Okay. Yeah, Witches, I mean, that movie seemed like such an odd, like, again, that comes back to, like, I very much dislike, like, they should remake movies that missed the mark or, like, that were almost good.
Well, but that's the thing, is The Witches did miss the mark. It did not make a lot of money at the box office.
No, but the film itself is good. Like, debatably. Yeah. I liked it when I was a kid.
Yeah, and I think there was a lot of people who liked it with the nostalgia on it. It's, it was definitely it definitely missed when it hit the theaters. But it's one of those things, like, where they talk about Hocus Pocus. Like, you know, why did Hocus Pocus fail at the box office but did well, you know, in video and everything else? Well, Hocus Pocus was released in June.
Right, yeah. It was a Halloween movie not released in Halloween.
Yeah, you know?
Checks out.
Yeah, it's a huge, you know, it's like, movie studios constantly do that. They constantly release movies that should be released at Halloween, not at Halloween.
Right. Yeah, they do that all the time. Because, I mean, you don't have to release a horror movie only at Halloween. That's not true at all. But, like, if your movie is extremely, like, that film, Hocus Pocus, is a great example of a movie that you really should release at Halloween, because it is a Halloween-centric movie. Like, that is a movie about Halloween. Like, that's an important part of the story. So, like, that's a perfect Halloween movie. Like, it should be released at Halloween. It's like the film fucking Halloween. It's like, yeah, you're gonna release Halloween at Christmas time? Like, no, it's called fucking Halloween. Like,
And then you also get to The Witches, which is released at Halloween, but is not a Halloween movie at all.
Right. That's just like a young adult kind of, barely even a horror movie. Like,
yeah. I don't know. The first one, the original one, the 1991 with Angelica Houston, is pretty, there's some really scary moments in it.
It has some, that movie to me, like, I find that it, like, as you get older, the fact, like, the horror in that film becomes more obvious.
Yeah.
Like, it becomes not necessarily obvious, but, like, severe. Like, when you watch it, you're like, ah, yeah, the witch did a thing. But then, like, as you're older, you're like, oh my God, that person was trapped in a painting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot more existential dread as
you age. Yes. The horror in that film is existential. So, like, as a kid, you're like, oh no, witches. And then, like, when you watch the movie as an adult, you're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, well, yeah. And that's also, you know, the thing is, you watch it as an adult and you have children and you're watching it through your children's eyes. You're like, oh, this is pretty terrifying.
Right.
I could see why this is scary. But yeah, the remake is fine. It's directed by Zemeckis. You know, he knows how to direct a movie. The effects are not great.
Okay.
But I don't think that it's a anything bad, just not the greatest special effects that they could have done. But it's an made for HBO movie, so they probably didn't dump that much money into it.
Right.
It was like because not Benicio del Toro, Guillermo del Toro wanted to remake it. I know.
Okay.
But he's one of those guys that's like Tarantino, where they throw out 1,000 ideas about what they want to do, and then they end up making a movie about a woman that has sex with a fish.
Yeah, I mean, but that was hot. We want to see that.
I know. I'm not big on the fish stuff. So,
well, that's why you could never appreciate The Lighthouse Lane the way I could appreciate it.
That's very true. It's very true. All right, let's.
You were fond of me, lobster, weren't you?
Yeah, fond of me, lobster. I love that. So
that's a movie that I again, I think we talked about that too, but like that was a movie where like that's a artsy fartsy horror movie, and I'm just like, I did not like that movie, but man, does it have memorable moments.
Exactly. I you know, I'm not the biggest Lighthouse fan in the world, but it's definitely one that I do not regret seeing. So
yes, yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
Well, and that's the funny thing is, like, I would watch it right now, except I'm just like, I don't really feel like it. And a movie I want to watch is Midsommar, but I'm like, I don't have the 4 hours to watch this movie right now.
Right.
I love Midsommar.
Yeah, the movie's definitely quite good.
So let's talk some gaming stuff. We've been yammering on about movies for a half hour.
Is there gaming stuff?
There is stuff that I'm at least interested in. So the big thing that people are crying about now, which is, of course, because you need something to complain about as our country is falling to shit. You need to complain about some plastic models.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's the priorities. World, not just our country.
Your priorities, bro.
Yeah. So Warcry Catacombs is being released next week. And people are really bitching about the price on it, which is $210 USD.
Okay.
It's being released for $120 in the UK.
Okay.
So if you do the conversion rates on that, it's $165 USD to the British pound. So you could literally, it's one of those ones where if you bought in Europe, you could probably get it shipped for cheaper than buying it in the US with free shipping.
Yeah, I mean, so import it. Like,
yeah.
If it's cheaper to do that. Like, your people are savvy. You can use the internet. If it's cheaper to do it another way, do it the way that it's cheaper.
I know. It's just, it boggles my mind. And especially in Australia, I think in Australia, it's like $400.
Oh yeah. The Australia, New Zealand prices are like, I think that there's some sort of, bitterness that Australia and New Zealand are no longer part of the British Empire, really, and they really like, they're more bitter about them than they are about the US, so yeah, they really punish them with the pricing.
And that's what it is. It's all about the fact that they
it's God save the Queen. That's what it is.
But they are still part of the Commonwealth.
Yeah, I mean, not really, not anymore, not after not now.
Yeah, no, they're still part of the Commonwealth.
Are they? Yeah. Well, then I don't fucking.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think the Commonwealth are British, ex-British territories that still recognize the Queen as the head of state.
Okay.
So that's why the U.S. is not part of the Commonwealth, because we do not recognize the Queen. But like Canada recognizes Queen Elizabeth, so therefore they're part of the Commonwealth.
I see.
Oh, Canada, your long and landless land.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So that's I think you could buy a car for cheaper than you could buy this box set. So
yeah, that's very expensive.
But or as they call it in Australia, a chumby womber.
A Chaz Wazler.
Chaz Wazler.
Yeah. Of course, be Chaz Wazler.
No, that's he goes, bullfrog? That's ridiculous. What would you call it? A Chaz Wazzer.
Yeah, that's right. A Chaz Wazzer. it's funny. I mean, I don't know. I guess so. Don't buy it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And it's, and part of it is, game. And part of it too is like, you don't get anywhere near as much terrain as the first box set. Like, the terrain in the first box set is gorgeous. It's one of the best terrain box sets you could buy.
Yeah. What was the price on that one?
160.
160. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's like really different about this box set that you get for Catacombs is that you get a catacomb supplement book that tells you how to play in the catacombs.
Okay.
But it's, that's about it. That's the only real difference. But yeah, the it's pretty on the expensive side. Like, if I was going to do it, I would probably end up buying it from the UK and just, you know, having it shipped. I don't know how much it would cost to have shipped, but I don't need it that much. The warbands are cool, but I probably will just buy them on eBay when someone parses out the set, you know? I'll buy it for like 40, 50 bucks, however much the sets cost.
I mean, makes sense to me.
Yeah. And I don't, and the train just looks like recycled Warhammer Quest doors. So
the thing about that is you can always just, you know, I know this sounds crazy. I know everyone's going to think I'm a madman, but hear me out here. You could always just not buy it.
Yeah, you can always not. It's a luxury item. We go over it, but if we always have that.
But it's not even like necessarily because it's a like let's minus the fact that it is a luxury item because it's a toy. Let's minus that and let's go deeper on that and say it's not even like required to be like if your argument was like I need this to be competitive in the game. It's not even that.
No, it's not.
It's a luxury item in a luxury field. So like, you just don't buy it. Like it's like you're not gonna lose the tournament because you don't have the stuff from this box. So like, it doesn't technically matter that it's expensive or whatever because like you don't need it.
Yeah, that's very true as well. It's not like
I can get the bitching of like the Giants because the Giants are super expensive. So if the Giants end up being, you know, like tournament. Like I don't want to say worthy, but like if there's a lot of lists where like the Giant turns your list from not competitive in a tournament to competitive, then you know complain about that price because that's like I need to buy this to remain competitive in the game. Like okay, yeah. Like sure, it's like then that goes back to the like you can only not complain due to the fact that this is period luxury item. It's not a luxury item in terms of competitive play. So
yeah, well I mean, and I think so. Really, if you're playing a 2,000 point AOS army, how many points can you spend on allies? Are you allowed in a tournament?
500, I believe.
500. Okay, so you can take a Mega Gargant.
Yeah, it's 500 when I last checked. I know there was some removing of, or not removing, but like rejiggering of the allies rules, but I'm fairly certain it's still 500 points of allies.
Yeah, because didn't we do the math and like. Because I think each of those Mega Gargants is only 250, right?
It was like 265 or something. I don't know. I remember them being kind of expensive, but not outrageous.
Yeah, I want to say that there was one that's like I want to say there's like one that's like 250, and the other ones are like 260, 270, something like that. And because I figured out, like, we did the math, and if you wanted to do 2,000 points of Sons of Behemoth, you need to take two Gargants, and it's like... 6 regular Gargants.
Yeah.
Or you could do like one Mega Gargant and 9 Gargants, something like that. So if you wanted to play that army. However, that wouldn't make any sense because you would need to take some allies for just doing stuff around the table and achieving objectives.
Yes. You kind of have the likely list for that army is going to be two of the really big boys and then, other stuff.
Yeah. Those also cost the cost of small cars in Australia.
Yes.
So looking, I mean, in the US, the price is I think they're like 210, right? Something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the Gargants, they now raise them to 2 per box set. And I think it's 120, which is not terrible, but it's pretty bad, the price on those guys.
Yes, yes.
But once again, and I think that's part of the problem overall with GW's pricing is that you have something that costs $210. And they're like, well, it's a luxury item. You know, not everybody is going to be buying them. However, if, you know, they did it even like 500 times the cost to produce, which probably would put it at like $60, you'd still like, you'd have a lot more people buying them. Yes, they'd be sitting on a shelf somewhere, but you'd a lot more people buying them.
Right, right.
And they probably, well, now that I think about it, I know this is a little weird because I'm a little drunk in the afternoon, but the they probably do that so that way you don't have a lot more entering in the secondary market when people, when they just sit on people's shelves for 5 years.
Yes, that makes sense.
That,
like, so, I'm sure that someone has like calculated the average amount of sales versus the average amount of players who are going to buy, and they're just like, this is the optimal price for us to do our perfect ROI.
Wait, do it in a British accent.
No.
This is the optimal level.
No, that's you can't have the soccer hooligan voice for doing those kind of numbers, and I can't do a posh one. I need to be, you know,
you can't do a posh British accent.
I don't think so. I think I can barely do a fucking soccer hooligan one.
Oi, oi, oi! You gotta talk like an orc for a soccer hooligan.
Yeah, well, exactly, and that's what I said. I can barely do it.
You can do a received BBC accent, which is, you know, the cost of the Mega Gargan today will be 219 pounds.
Oh, yeah. The British baking show style. You're like,
no, the British baking show
you've got a lot of flaking here, and I don't really like that.
Is that your Paul Hollywood? Is that what you're trying to do there?
I'd prefer it to be a little more robust. Your sponge is overworked. See, it's just overworked, mate. You can't.
You got the work part. That work.
Overworked.
You got that. And you did sponge too, which means that you are a big fan of the British Baking Show.
I love the British Baking Show.
The great, you know, Paul, the Paul Hollywood handshake. I watched the Great British Baking Show with my wife, and I will tell you, nothing sounds more delicious to me than a chocolate cake that has like minced meat inside of it.
I have seen, there are a couple where they've done the like savory plus sweet, and I'm like, I'll pass. But then there's generally though, they're doing like, they don't too often have the like savory plus sweet at the same time.
No, it's just
when they do them, I'm always super grossed out because that kind of stuff's nasty. Because I think like honey ham is disgusting.
Well, yeah, well, it's just I believe the taste of the British Isles in general, where you have the like, oh, what kind of bread is this? Well, this is a cinnamon babka made with jalapenos. And you're just like, jalapeno.
That sounds
like, and you're that just like, what might, the fuck are you doing?
I was about to say, it actually sounds like it might be pretty good.
That's because I'm American and I understand taste buds.
I like the
they'll be
spicy.
Yeah, they'll be like, this is a birthday cake made with a jalapeno chutney and mint sauce, and you're just like, what? Go away.
I don't know. I've seen Eastern European food, and it's pretty hard to get worse than that.
Oh no, man, you just get some nice.
He's
bring back Borat. No, you get some nice pierogies, a little bit of some cheese.
Even the grossest food cuisines all have some that are not the worst, and I would say pierogies are there. They're certainly not the worst. So
what's gross about Eastern European food? Boiled cabbage.
I love boiled cabbage.
I love boiled cabbage too.
No, there's like the weird like herbs and shit. Although actually the grossest
what,
thing I've
dill?
Ever was, the grossest thing I've ever eaten was halva. I was one of the nastiest.
I don't know what that is.
It's somewhat Middle Eastern, I think.
Middle Eastern.
It's like an almondy. I don't know. It's fucking disgusting. And then also, what is it? What's that shit that's like eating sand?
What?
There's a candy that's like eating sand. Well, marzipan.
Oh yeah, marzipan. Yeah. Oh, marzipan. Marzipan's not Eastern European, sir. That's just
I was just thinking of gross foods. Yeah. No, mostly like fermented meats. Like any of the fermented meats are Eastern European or Scandinavian. Like,
yeah, that's more of a I was going to say
we're going to pass on that.
I'll give you some of the gross stuff that I actually like. I really liked pickled herring in a cream sauce. That's
fucking nasty as shit.
It's not nasty as shit. It's actually quite good. You have it on a little piece of toast and it's delicious.
See? See, we can't trust your opinions on food now. You've admitted to liking pickled herring. It's all over. the jig is up.
But you know what? I love all food. That's the difference, is that there's very few cuisines around the world where I'll just turn my nose up on. And mostly it's like the stuff that I don't like is the British. So with the exception of a, what's that called? Beef Wellington. I love me a beef Wellington.
However, yeah, I mean, it's meat plus bread. How can you possibly go wrong?
And a mushroom, like a mushroom kind of paste. But the only problem with that is that they put pine nuts in it, in the traditional British one, which I'm just like, that's a weird texture for that right there when you add in that crunchy pine nut, but whatever.
I don't know. Most of the stuff I see in the British Baking Show looks quite delicious.
And even the failing busts of Marie Antoinette.
the weird ones do amuse me.
But, well, that's the part I absolutely hate, because I'm like, this should be about like taste and presentation, not like how goofy or like fancy you can get with like making a person, like a sculpture. Like that's the sculpting ability. Has nothing to do with your baking ability.
Well, yeah, but that's part of the baking now. Is this a skill required to be known as a baker? It's just, can you do it?
Which I don't like, because it should be like, it's
lame. Blame that Boston guy who made the weird cakes.
Cake Boss?
No, not Cake Boss.
Cake Boss.
Cake Boss is hilarious. Cake Boss was arrested for driving completely fucking hammered once, and he is apparently there is footage somewhere of him just screaming out drunkenly, "You can't arrest me! I'm the Cake Boss!" Which is very humorous to me.
Yeah. Now, let's go on to at least one other gaming thing for today. I think the other big thing is that they finally previewed the new season of Underworlds, Dire Chasm.
Oh yeah, they have the
the Slaaneshi dudes and the Lumineth,
the cowhead guys.
Yeah, but there's no cowheads in the actual warband. I guess there is a cow hat guy, not a cow head guy.
Yes, the cow hats. That's what I should say. They don't have cow heads. They have cow hats.
Well, they do have cow heads. The big Minotaur guys have the cow heads.
Well, that's true, but those aren't living things. They're basically robots.
The robots? Are they golems?
Golem robots.
Golem. Yes. Yeah. Those guys are. Those are the two that are in the warband and in the box set. Interesting choice for the box set, in my opinion. I don't know a ton of people who, I don't know a lot of people that those would universally be like, oh man, these are the coolest things for the box set. You know, the Beastgrave one at least had the Beastmen in it. I know the Wood Elves were part of a warband for a faction that doesn't even exist in Age of Sigmar yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the future will. But the Beastmen were at least fairly cool. Like, everyone loved the Beastmen. Yes. And he's maybe the Slaaneshi guys, but there's no like Slaaneshi mortals yet.
So, I mean, it doesn't matter if they're good in warbands, people will use them.
Yeah, it's true. The you get your first Slangor, which is really cool looking, dude.
It's really all that matters.
It really is all that matters. There's not a lot of exposed genitalia, which I find interesting in the box set.
They really moved away from that. You know, much to all of our detriment.
Yeah, I do like the fact that all the Slaaneshi guys do not have like their faces shown. So it's like, oh, these guys are gonna be way easier to paint than the Lumineth.
Yes.
And the Lumineth just look like straight up Lumineth. There's nothing that's unique or fancy about them. They look like straight out of your army box.
Yeah, they're normal. They're you know, as per usual.
There's a greatsword person in the box set. I don't know if they're like the leader or not of the warband. I think that they might be the Maiari, I think is the name of it. And that's the one with the greatsword. It is one of the goofiest looking poses I've ever seen. And I think a lot of it has to do with the studio paint job on it. The studio paint job looks really kind of funky. And I'm just, I look at it and I'm just like, that's so weird. It's such a weird looking paint, and a weird looking pose, a weird looking paint job. I don't know what they were thinking on that one. Mm. But yeah,
they've done that a few times, which is just a very odd paint jobs. They're just kind of like, huh, I don't know why you do that. Like when they painted the horizontal musculature on the Minotaur's leg, and it's like a flat surface, but it's
We can't talk. You can't talk about the Minotaurs. The Minotaurs are the absolute worst figure ever produced and painted for Games Workshop.
No, you can, because they're the best. They're the best example of a Minotaur model that is not great. Like, I'm the first to admit that those models are not great at all. They're okay at best. But I would also be the first to argue that the specific official paint job makes them look so much worse than they actually are, because of the way they painted their legs. Because they painted, like...
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with the leg. The entire paint job is terrible.
That's also true. But, like, very specifically, like, the muscles. Because they, like, painted them in directions that muscles don't go. They're very strange looking.
Well, even on top of that, though, my problem with the studio paint job on, let's say, the Lumineth right now, is that you could go up and released a preview on the same day they showed all of the new Blood Bowl stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Blood Bowl stuff that they currently have is the nicest painted, like, everything that they released for Blood Bowl, whoever is, like, in the studio painting the Blood Bowl stuff is probably the best GW painter out there. I'm not joking. Like, I look at his stuff, and every time I see his stuff, I'm just like, this guy needs to paint everything.
Yeah, I mean, the Blood Bowl stuff always looks great, so I wouldn't argue against that, because I think the Blood Bowl stuff always looks really, really good. So.
Yeah, whoever the studio painter is, though, is honestly ridiculous, because, like, his paint jobs are what everyone should emulate when they're painting.
Mm.
Because it's not hyper-realistic, but it's realistic. The realism that he achieves is through technique and not through, like, I'm going to wet blend everything. Right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Just the standard, like, I am painting a model.
Yeah, I am painting a model, and this...
A lot of the Forge World stuff I found was like that, too. Like, there's, like, a lot of the Forge World... Oh, that's probably just because it's mostly 40K, but, like, I find that a lot of the Forge World paint jobs are just, like, this is a nice paint job, and it's, like, it looks nice because it's just done. Like,
The Forge World stuff is all probably painted by people who work at Forge World, that's why I'm kind of wondering if, like, the person who paints the Blood Bowl stuff, you know, because I think Blood Bowl's put up by Forge World right now, right?
I don't actually know. Blood World's plastic, so I don't know. I don't think any plastic is done by Forge World.
Yeah,
but then they kind of, like, fold Forge World into regular GW in some way.
Yeah, I don't know. This is like Crisis on Infinite Earth style confusing, but
that's true.
But yeah, I totally. It's like you see the guy who paints the Blood Bowl stuff, and you're like, Jesus Christ, these are so beautiful. Like, it makes you want to play the game because of how beautifully they're painted, but they're not painted in a style that's too much of that shit you see that, like, people on Patreon try to teach you how to paint.
Oh yeah, like the ludicrous, like, the non-gaming pieces. That's how I always look at paint jobs. Like, I approach every paint job, period. Like, that these are gaming pieces first. That's what I do. So I'm
absolutely.
Like, I'm like, did you paint them with, like, a weird material that leaves you unable to touch them? Like, when they were doing, like, the oil based paints for a while, like, when that was trending, like, you couldn't fucking touch the model anymore.
Yeah.
Like, cause the paint would just slough off the model. Like, okay, so that's not good. It's not a gaming piece. Like, it's a gaming piece. Let's make it a gaming piece. So I stand by that. I think that's that's my, like, usual, like, this is why.
Yeah. I mean,
this way.
And it's not even that. It's like, I hate, and I like when people, and I don't, people don't ask my advice on painting that often, but, like, I do talk to people about it. And when I do, it's just like, no, stay away from those people on Patreon or anything else who are trying to teach you how to paint, because they're teaching you how to paint a fucking display bottle or like a Golden Demon piece, which is fine, but you're never gonna paint anything else. You're gonna be working on that one figure until you die.
Right. Yeah. So it's always, you know, what are you painting? That's why I was asking people, like, is this something you want to put in a shelf and never touch again? Then, like, yeah, then by all means, go with all sorts of crazy techniques.
That definition is most people's gaming material.
It's the intent. It's no. We're not talking about what actually happens. We're talking about the intent. Because the intent is important. Because it's do you intend to touch this again?
Yeah. There was a tabletop inquirer one that I really liked about painting. I'm gonna see if I can pull it up really quick. It's Nope, that's one of his hobbyists has seriously considered getting into Blood Bowl for the last 25 years. no, this it was a guy can name drop every A-list painter, but still kind of sucks at painting.
I like it.
And like, and that's always like my thing is like, I walk in and this guy's like, and like to a, let's say I go to a hobby shop and I see like the person sitting at the bar or table, whatever, painting their stuff. And I'm just like, oh, that's cool that they're talking about. And the guy's like, yeah, I'm and I can see him using his water, his wet blend palette and everything like that. He's got all these techniques and everything all set up. And he's painting his one figure that's kind of mediocre. And he's been working on it for the last, you know, 2 months. And here I am with my fully painted army that I blew out in 3 months. And I'm just like, yeah, let's play. Come on.
Yeah. That's it. If you're trying to do display quality stuff on an army, just don't. Like, it's not worth it.
Yeah,
it's really not like that's really all it is. It's just it is not worth it.
I did finish my orc army though, by the way. Three months to 2150. How come I couldn't do that back when people were playing fantasy?
Because you now have the time to do it because you don't have to go anywhere.
It's true. Not that I was going anywhere before, but
well, yeah, but there were more chores to do that involved going away from your home, whether or not you were going out.
I don't really think as much because I think I'm doing, because I started the army in August when most of the restrictions were lifted. And now we're actually back to being more restrictive. So I wasn't going anywhere in August either. So
I don't know, man. Don't get me. I can't answer. Yeah. This, I can't.
You don't go anywhere. You hide in a hole.
Yeah. I stay. You're like, I know.
Yeah. I think that's about it in terms of gaming stuff that I actually wanted to talk about.
There's a game on Kickstarter. There's two Kickstarters that are pretty good. One is called Thirsty Sword Lesbians, and I just like the name of that game. It's that's simple as that. I don't know anything about it. It's made by the same guys who do Fate, so it might be a Fate system thing. I don't know. It's a great name for a game. And then the other, that's the big trending one, definitely, which I mean we kind of have to talk about it, is Darkest Dungeon.
Is it having a Kickstarter?
Darkest Dungeon. It is a board game Kickstarter. It is let me see what the level is at. So there's 12 days to go. It's at $2 million. And it's, you know, it's got everything you'd expect. So it has like, it is the aesthetic of the game is perfectly reflected in the miniatures. They even have the like incorrect body proportions that's the way they look. Everything is stylized in the game.
So yeah,
characters' heads are bigger than they should be and their limbs are shorter than they should be, and they replicated that flawlessly.
Yeah, it's
look perfect.
It's like a mixture of like standard miniatures to chibi, but like if you found like if you were converting a miniature to chibi but got stuck halfway through.
Yeah, they're a caricature. That's like that's a miniature style that you don't see very often at all, and it's very, you know, and I think the fastest way to describe it is caricature.
And so this is based off a video game?
Yes, it's based off a video game called called Darkest Dungeon. Very, very popular game.
Did you play it?
I have played it. Yes. It's good. It's very hard. It's you're exploring your inheritance, and like you inherited this, like basically you inherited a fucking dungeon. And you're the core is that you are not one of the adventurers. Like it's not a role-playing game. You are the owner of said, like basically a town, like you basically own a town, a hamlet. And you recruit heroes to explore the dungeon. And
so wait, treasure. it's a hamlet. So it does not have a church.
It is called a hamlet, so it probably does not have a church. They're probably accurate with that.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure because it's only a hamlet if it does not have a church, I believe is the actual.
It has a sanatorium, if that makes any sense. And there is a clergy thing in the sanatorium, so I don't know if that counts.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't start with that. You have to build that. So the way it works is you build up, you recruit new heroes, and you basically make a little adventuring party that you then go in and command through the dungeon. And it's kind of got like a press your luck mechanic. Whammy. I'm sure they'll replicate this in the board game. So I haven't looked at the board game stuff because I don't back Kickstarters very often, and I try not to back board games that should be released through normal channels that are just released through Kickstarter, especially when they're by companies that are well-versed in the industry. That's generally not my jam.
We've talked about that.
Yes. So, but the core exploration mechanic is light in the game. So your characters have torches, and the more light you have, the better everything is for your party. So like, they don't lose sanity as fast. They crit better. They fight better. You know, everything is better if you have light. Mm-hmm. And the more light you have, the better it is. Now, this is where the press your luck mechanic comes in. The less light you have, the worse everything gets for you. But you get a reward multiplier. So if you go in with almost no light, everything you get, the treasure you find, the rooms, like that is way, way increased. So you get better treasure. So you have to try and figure out an optimal, like, is this enough light to not die, but get the best treasure? That's kind of where it is. But the game is extremely brutal in the one bad combat round will kill your whole party. And then you're just like, fuck. So you get a new, but the thing is, the game is, it's roguelike. So like, if your party dies, you just keep going.
Yeah.
Like your party is dead. And then you have to recruit more characters. So sometimes you lose a character that you've spent a lot of time leveling and investing into their party. And then then you're like, ah, shit. So you kind of start at ground zero,
yeah.
Which sucks. But, you know, that's just the way it is sometimes. And they actually have a pretty robust, like, level system where, like, if the quest is too difficult, your characters will be like, we'll die if you send us there. You can still send them there. You can absolutely force them to go to a quest that they have no possible way of doing. They'll just die. And then there's if they're too high level, they won't go to low level quests. So you can't have like one badass character carry your group. You know, one level 10 character, he won't do level 3 quests. So like, he's like, that's beneath me. I'm way too cool for that. So it's mostly managing the town and managing your characters and then going into the dungeon. It's fun though. Like it's been ported on everything too. Like if you have a console or a computer, you can play it. Like it's not.
Can I play it on my phone while I'm taking a poop?
I don't think there's a mobile version, but there might be.
I don't know. They got a Call of Duty mobile now. So the I was looking this up.
There is a tablet edition.
So I'm looking up just Mythic games in general. Just one thing of note that I find funny is that their Kickstarter symbol for Mythic games is cut weird. So it just says Mythic Aim, AME, because the G and the S is cut off in the way that their kerning works. So it's like, come on, Mythic, you're putting out a game that's got, you know, that's going to get $3 million or whatever else have you. Let's fix this. And yeah. And I also look at their created because I wanted to see, like, should they have released this? And it's like, you know, maybe they should have released this in general. Because I think that Darkest Dungeon, as you were explaining it, it probably is popular enough where we don't have to fund it through Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah. It's hugely, hugely popular game. Like it was like for a long time, it was like the number one thing to stream too. It was just like super, super popular.
But it does look like the majority of their games are kind of on the probably could be released through Kickstarter.
They did the Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
Over a million. Hell, the Last Saga, over 2 million.
Joan of Arc was their first one that they did.
And they did it 1.5 as well, which also made over a million. Like I'm saying, they released it. They've released multiple $1 million or higher Kickstarter.
And I also think that part of their, because I believe that they're European based, right?
Probably.
So, like a European based Kickstarter with like the quality level of miniatures that they have, like for Joan of Arc, and they have I think that their rules design team has a little bit of a pedigree too.
Their Solomon Kane game made almost 2 million.
Yeah, I think part of that is the fact that they probably have much cheaper shipping to Europe, which is probably a big sell for a lot of European. Oh no, they're in. They are not a European company. That is my mistake. They are actually from Newark, Delaware. So
we're here.
I thought they were a European company. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, they tend to make a lot of money on it. I think they have a decent pedigree though.
Yeah, they've made, you know, multiple million, you know, so Joan of Arc total has made, you know, almost $4 million on Kickstarter. So that there's no real reason to do Darkest Dungeon outside of normal channels, other than, you know, cutting out retailers. That's the goal. Which is, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Kickstarter in that regard. I said, like, if Kickstarter had remained what it was supposed to be, then it'd be, you know, fine, but it's not. It's just become a store. It's become a pre-order system, where you just, you know, that's just the way it is. And then also it's also Scalper City. Like, you know, it's probably worthwhile. Like, I was looking at the big Kickstarters, and like, your ROI is very high if you just back like a hot Kickstarter and just sit on it for a little while. As long as it's a self-contained game. So here's the difference. If you have one of those Kickstarters that's for like a miniatures game that makes a shit ton of money, those models will be worth nothing.
Yes.
They will have no value. You can go ahead and, you know, once those come out and everyone has them, they're garbo. They're worth nothing. That's I've noticed that to be pretty consistent with every miniatures game based Kickstarter. Now, take that and apply it to board game. If it's a successful board game, your value goes super high. So yeah. Like, as long as it doesn't come out through regular channels, ever, like, your value goes up and up and up and up. Look at, like, you know, Kingdom Death. Like, Kingdom Death version 2 is worth an absolute fortune on eBay. Like,
I so regret, I didn't have the money back then, but if I had the money to have backed Kingdom Death the way that when it came out, holy shit, what should I have done that?
Yes. Yeah. It was worth an absolute fortune. Like, just ton of money. Like, that's the strongest example of the, like, you know, oh, you spent $400 on this Kickstarter. Cool. Well, you can sell it for $2,000 on eBay. So like, there's that. And because that's a thing, you know, most of the board games do fall into that category. So I'm sure Darkest Dungeon at some point will be worth far more than whatever you paid for it on Kickstarter.
Yeah, maybe it's, I'm not sold on it just because A, I don't know the background to it, and B, it looks way more fiddly and complicated than I would ever want in a board game. Like, there's like apps and shit, and I'm just like, nah. Ooh, Stargate, yeah. SG-1 role-playing game. all about it.
Yeah. I've kind of given up on board games, or I've kind of given up on games, man. I don't really play games anymore. If it's not a digital card game, I'm probably not interested. That's like,
well, you can't, well, I mean, for you, it's playing is the big thing, and you won't leave the house.
I mean, it wouldn't have people over to play, because I mean, who the fuck's going to play? And then like, the game is super complicated and only one person knows how to play, and they're like, oh yeah, well, I'll teach everyone how to play. And then that person wins and nobody ever wants to play ever again. You know, it's just
I get what you're saying, but I'm saying even like with like Age of Sigmar or something like that.
Yeah.
You don't have the space right now for it.
Yeah.
And you're not going to a game store. So
no, definitely not. And so, and it's just kind of like, well, we'll pass. And you know, it just, and then the games that I think look really cool are like so fucking complicated. Like, I can't do anything with them. It's like cool. Like Kingdom Death is a great example. Like that game looks dope as shit. But that game is so fucking complicated and so in-depth. Like, I don't have a bunch of, like, hardcore gamers I know who want to play it. And then, like, that's a game that's certainly not optimal for two people. So if I find one person who's, like, you know, very game savvy, who's like, yeah, I'll play. It's like, okay, cool. Oh, well, it's just the two of us. And, like, the game's, you know, not really playable with just two people. Cool. So we just never touch it again.
Never touched again.
I mean, it's like, you know, you might really like Dune, or you might really like Twilight Imperium, but if only you and one other person are big into like game, that's it. You can't have like, you know,
two player Dune.
Yeah, you can't have two player Dune. You can't have, you know, even three player Dune is sketch. And like, everyone kind of needs to know what they're doing, because it's like, after a certain number of games, the people who don't know the game or don't care to know the game, like, they'll just stop playing. That's how it works. Like, they just don't care anymore, because they're like, I always lose. I don't know why I lose. Fuck this game. I'm done. Like, that's well, I mean, that's, yeah, but that's how it is. Like, I've played in enough, you know, I've played in enough board games to like see that happen over and over and over. And that's why like, I don't believe anyone is a board gamer. I believe that they're a board game hoarder. I think that everyone who's in the board games seriously, like, look at the board game collecting, like, pictures and shit. It's not about playing the game. No. It's about hoarding as many board games as you can.
You know, you're right there. I mean, I would not lie to you in that, and I would not lie and say that you are incorrect
Yeah. So but, it's like if it's about hoarding as many board games, like yes, that makes sense. It's having the IKEA wall shelf completely, you know, top to bottom in board games. That's what board gaming is. It's not about playing the games. It's about having them and showing that you have them.
Yes, and that's the most important thing is that you have to show it off on game forums, and you have to show rate my collection.
Yes, you must. Of
Settlers of Catan versions that you have. Yeah, that's an absolute must. I was talking about that recently with a buddy of mine about what was it called? Like just people online with these niche groups that they're part of. Mm-hmm. Like that feeds into each other. So like a great classic example is the Halloween movie Hocus Pocus, which is super popular right now, at least in terms of things that you could buy.
Yes.
So like, okay, it starts off as you know, on a movie forum, people going like, you know what, I really like this underrated gem, Hocus Pocus, and they have to use the term underrated gem.
Yes.
And so it's like, I really like this movie, and so they find like a couple more people who are like, yeah, I really like this movie, and then they talk about it, and then they form a splinter forum, right, where they talk about Hocus Pocus and like their love of Hocus Pocus. So what that devolves into is then like, check out my Hocus Pocus Halloween costume that I did, and then it becomes, well, check out my shrine to Hocus Pocus. The person's like, look at my entire
one-upsmanship.
Yeah, the one-upsmanship of who is the bigger Hocus Pocus fan that you have on these forums. And it gets fucking ridiculous. A great example in our own hobby is Old Hammer. Like these people who are like, check out my Old Hammer.
Old Hammer's insane.
Like, check out my Old Hammer collection. It's like, it's like a bunch of boxes of old Warhammer shit that are unopened. And at one time I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool. But at the same time, it's kind of like, those are models that are not being played with, you know, it's defeating the purpose of why you have them. Mm-hmm. They're not meant to be stuck in a box. And it's the same thing I feel about Funkos or any toy in general. It's like, the box art is cool. You can keep the box, but like take the toy out and play with it, man.
Right. Right. Yeah. Just play with it, man.
Yeah. It's there to be played with. You're defeating the purpose of what it is. But yeah, that's like Hocus Pocus, and like board games are the same exact way. It's like people don't care about playing the game. They just care about what people on imaginary internet or people on forums are saying, and like some imaginary like kudos points that they're getting. It's stupid.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, that's just how I feel about it in general. It's like, oh, it's cool that you have this collection and everything, but what's the point? You're not doing anything with it.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I've said. Like, I've seen so many, like I've seen people and talked to people like who have, and it's like, he's like, yeah, I've got like, you know, $8,000 worth of board games. I'm like, cool. What game do you play? Like, oh, we just play Settlers of Catan.
Every
like,
time.
And it's like, okay. Like, do you play anything else? No.
Who doesn't love Settlers of Catan though? Oh wait, Steve.
Yeah, that game sucks. It's a shit game.
It's not a shit game. It's a fun game.
Shit game. It's a shit game.
King making. Yes.
Hope people don't roll sevens and hope that someone doesn't get salty and pick the winner.
Yeah, that's the way. That's what it does come. There's a lot of king making in that game.
Yeah, king making and random shit. Like I don't like random shit. Like it's RNG the game. Like
yeah, you don't like the randomness of it quite that much.
Oh,
which is the reason why you don't play the Blood Bowl. All right, so that's
as we've discussed.
So Blood Bowl, great game, definitely not for Steve.
No, I would just it's too random for me.
It's too random. So anyway, you can go to the Game Classy Facebook page is the best way you can get in contact with us. You can also like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes, like, comment, subscribe on the YouTubes. If you'd like to check out our stuff, you could check out Steve on. He's no longer on Twitter. My bad.
I'm not anywhere.
You're not anywhere. You're not on the Reddit anymore either.
I'm still on there, but like, I mean, no one's gonna know it's me. I just like, randomly look at things.
Yeah. Until either A, we reelect Trump, and Steve goes back on Twitter so that he can call him all sorts of names every day.
Yes.
Or we elect Biden, where Steve will also do the same. But we do not have you can check out my stuff on the Instagram. I am at Game Classy Joe, or you can check out the stuff that I make in 3D on Thingiverse, which is Classy Game Joe. I don't know why I did that. I was probably drunk as well. But yeah, you can see my stuff. I just finished up my orc army, my sixth edition orc army. And so I'm going back and filling out some of the Warhammer Underworld stuff that I have not painted. I'm getting close to finishing off everything, Steve. Getting close.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah. I think I have 8 warbands left that I have to paint.
All right.
Out of, 24 that are total? I think there was 26 total warbands. So I only have 8 left, which is pretty good. It's less than a third. And aside from that, am I missing anything, Steve? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
All right. So, Steve, until next time.
A Pakistani man named Sitar Bukhsh opened a cafe shop with a Starbucks logo, but his face was on it, and he named it Sitar Bukhsh in one word. And Starbucks sued him, and they lost because he said, "That's my name and my face in the logo."
It's very true.
Oh, well, there you go. Take that, Starbucks.
Game Classy.